right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley. Welcome to the Soul of Zervano Show. I'm Joe Dougherty. We've got a fantastic show. John Zervanos, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, Joe.
I think we got I'll tell you what. Not only do we have a special guest, but we're talking about a serious topic here that includes some of our most vulnerable citizens. And it's my pleasure to bring into the broadcast City Councilman at Large, David O. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. One of the premise of this show is, John, the firm represents a number of vulnerable individuals who have been sexually assaulted or assaulted at the negligence of somebody else. Talk about what that means just in general and in regards to the type of cases that you guys represent. And then I'm going to bring David in to talk about a sort of a similar situation that he uncovered in the city of Philadelphia.
Sure. Well, our firm has involved ourselves with representing individuals who have been both sexually assaulted and victims of crime. And what you're going to find is that in a lot of these cases, victims of crime, sexual assaults occur in the very institutions that are created in order to protect the people that are there. And we've had many situations, and we've got many currently, where we're representing adults and children in the past, but who have become victims of sexual assaults due to the behavior of their physicians. And we've also represented children who have gone to institutions for their own protection and then became assaulted either by an individual who works there or by a fellow patient.
Okay.
And a lot of times, before we got on the record today, we were talking about mandatory reporters. Especially in these institutions, if there's something that's going on and you become aware of it or have a real strong suspicion that something's going on, you've got to report it. And the goal is for folks to step in and protect whoever needs the protection and then address discipline to the individual who's either assaulting or doing the sexual assaulting. And this happens more than the public wants to believe and would believe.
It's interesting because we've had these conversations before, and I've had them with David. David is somebody who does a fantastic job in regards to our youth in the city of Philadelphia. At the same time, sometimes things happen you can't even imagine. And one of the things that we've all talked about this on prior shows, sometimes, there are predators everywhere that you don't even realize. And I remember having this conversation, I think it was with you, John, talking about, you look at the Jerry Sanduskys of the world, you look at the Michigan State, the doctor, and all, and when you have a Jerry Sandusky situation, he goes as far as to start a nonprofit, okay, and or individuals will, you'll talk about what happened with the Catholic Church, right? And we all agree and understand there's a lot of great people out there and across society, but obviously there are some bad people too, and the bad people have become more sophisticated. So as we as a society and our political representatives like David pay attention to these situations and do everything they can at prevent them and justice on behalf of your part, John Zervanos, these these individuals are not just babysitters anymore. They're individuals that put themselves in such sophisticated positions. Was it Larry Nassar was actually molesting the actual patients in front of their parents, and they didn't even know it.
You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, in all those circumstances, it happens once, and the institution might have an excuse saying, hey, you know, how are we supposed to know?
That's right.
When it happens over and over and over again, which is what happened in all these cases.
Everyone.
It's because either someone's not paying attention or that they chose not to pay attention.
Well,
and nowhere is that more true than with the Catholic Church.
Well, yeah.
Years and, I mean, decades of abuse.
Why? I'm a Catholic, right? And I can tell you this, and I'm that ticked off when the Pope came. One of the things that I said was, if he doesn't bring this up, okay, that it was the elephant in the room, man. Okay, it was the elephant in the room, and I wondered for years. Now, there were some priests in my where I lived, okay, from my school that were on that list, okay. I never made altar boy, thank God. I missed it by one point. Somebody was with me, right? But also at my high school, and it ticks me off beyond belief. But I wonder if David, if that happened to a normal guy, a normal person, some guy outside, if he did that, the law would be all over him if we got him, okay?
Right, sure.
How do these people get away with transferring somebody to another? Now, this was before, but I'm still saying for decades and maybe decades and decades and decades.
Because the whole institution decided to turn a blind eye. They knew what was going on, and they thought it would just go away, kind of like what Joe Paterno did with Sandusky.
Right.
It'll just go away. Let's not talk about it. It'll just go away.
Well you're Joe Paterno, okay? Yeah. And you're now in a situation. You're a legend. I don't know exactly what he knew, but that assistant coach that caught Sandusky with the kid, he took on his entire life. He put on the line and the blasphemy from everybody, but he did it, and he's a hero for doing it.
But he paid for it professionally. His coaching career
absolutely
pretty much
over.
Yeah,
over. But Joe Paterno looked at it and said, I'm sure, I have no idea if this happened, but I'm going to be hypothetical in the fact that he might have went to somebody and they said, the whole institution is going to come down, just get rid of him, right? And we'll just like give him a buyout. My point is, these people put institutions and people that have never been in these situations in these positions, and they turn a blind eye to it, and they're wrong for doing it.
But here's what happens, and this is, I think, why we have the councilman here today, is you create a system, okay, that can become so hypersensitive to a potential risk.
Oh, yeah.
That it's just the mere accusation causes a snowball that becomes so big that it's out of control.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit today.
Councilman, if you will, you have a real interesting story and it's ironic you being a city council person, but your situation ironically is they didn't recognize you as a city councilman when you came in your gym clothes and so you saw what it was like to be a regular citizen of Philadelphia. You're a regular citizen, but you know what I mean. And my point is, you saw a situation that literally you eventually got to the bottom of and held hearings for. Would you, that relates to what John's talking about, could you kind of elaborate on that?
Sure.
this is not, this is, you've talked about this many times before. This is not,
I'm a city councilman at large, which means I serve the whole city. And we're very accessible. It's very easy to run into us, talk to us. You come to city council, there we are. And I, in particular, have an open door policy. Like, my door is literally open. You walk down the hallway.
You say that, but every time I come to the office, he's not
well,
here.
You're on a special list. We don't want to share that, but you're on a list.
Thanks, Nelson. I appreciate that.
So what happens, people could see me. I met this woman, and I didn't think she was all there. to be honest, and she was telling me in bits and pieces about her daughter who had been wrongfully taken from her, and that she had been somehow abused, and we never got around to me understanding what she was saying, but piece by piece, as she told me, the story came out that somehow her daughter was placed with a sexual predator, and she had escaped, and then the daughter was returned to the same person.
So this is a member of the public that came in?
A member of the public. Come talk to me, and I try to understand and give credit to anyone, because I know you can't judge a book by its cover, and I also know that sometimes people who appear to be the least credible people are the ones that are targeted and victimized, and so I do try to listen and try to understand. And then one day, she shows up in my conference room with a little girl, looked like she was about 10 years old, who comes over and hugs me and says, "My mommy says you've been helping us," which I really hadn't. I was listening, and I was just struck by the fact that as this woman doesn't appear to be all there, and she has financial issues and other things, but her daughter loves her. And her daughter's so happy to be with her mother, and they're back. And I felt very good, like daughter-mother reunited. Month later or so, she comes to me crying, saying they took my daughter. They just reopened the file. They removed her and all these things. And I found that very odd. And so I tried to follow through, and I was getting a lot of
resistance?
Corroboration, no, of what she was saying, and I was trying to but who would do that? Who would take someone's child, and why is this, I couldn't understand. And someone said, oh, it's all financial, and I couldn't understand what they were talking about. And me, I'm trying to help the woman, but I'm trying to think, is this a systemic problem or just something that happened, an oddity? Am I dealing with one pothole in front of somebody's house, or is it like 5,000 potholes? And, you know, like, I'm trying to see, what is the answer? What is my role?
The old, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah, so right. So what you're getting to is I was teaching my children for them.
I guess not long after that, or was that the same?
No, it's kind of like, you know, completely unrelated. My wife took our kids to martial arts for some reason, didn't tell me, and signed them up for piano, and then she took them out of martial arts. And kids being kids, you can't wake them up Monday through Friday, but on Sunday morning, they're up at like 6 o'clock, you know, tearing down the roof. So right. My wife is like moaning, groaning. I said, you know what, I'm going to teach them martial arts in the morning, because my wife was saying, you got to teach. I said, I'll teach them. 8 o'clock, we'll be done. 9 o'clock, we'll do our little thing. We'll go to church, you know, we're going to come in. So I started doing that, and I got the whole setup. I got mats, I got uniforms, I got all the safety equipment.
Because
I've been in my house. I've been doing this a long time. I've taught kids, I've taught adults, you know, all that stuff. And and so one day, one Sunday morning, we're going through our routine, and part of it is I'll flip them sometimes, and they'll roll and stay.
Learn how to take a fall?
Yeah. No, they know how to take a fall. They've learned. It's kind of like one of the first things you learn, how to roll. I do a judo throw on my son, but I'm looking at his feet go like straight up in the air, and he comes down on his shoulder, like between his ear, and he gets up and he's stunned. And I'm like, oh my goodness. I said, you know, I try to see, and he just looked white, and he looked like, you know, like things were wrong. He didn't cry, didn't groan. I got my wife. I said, we're going to take him to the hospital. You know, I don't know, but he might have a broken clavicle, might be fractured. So we race off there. I'm in my T-shirt, my shorts, my wife. She's, you know, we get to Children's Hospital, great hospital. And to make a very long story short, basically, a social worker comes in and says, I need to talk to you outside the room. And I just noted she didn't say who she was. She didn't say, is this, you know, how's it with your son? Is it okay if we step? Just kind of like, need to get out and talk to you. And then she said, your son has a fractured clavicle. And I said, oh, that's what I was afraid of, you know. She said, I'm reporting to DHS. And I perked up and said, well, why? And she said, oh, it's no big deal. We just, when this happens, we report it. I said, really, but what's the reason? Department of Human Services, you know. And I didn't know the Child Protective Services law, but I am an attorney and a councilman, although, you know, I didn't tell anybody that. She said, it's no big deal. It's routine. And I said, it's routine. I said, you know, she said, you know, I said, you know, like anybody comes in here and you report it. She said, any male who comes in with a hurt child, we report it to DHS. I said, wow, that would make DHS really busy, you know. And she got what I was saying. And so we had this exchange where she basically told me, you shouldn't be teaching your son judo. And I said, wow, you know, judo is an Olympic sport. And it's taught in Japan, public school. I mean, and I'm certified instructor and everything. I said, what if I'm teaching him wrestling or basketball or breakdancing or bicycle? She said, it doesn't matter. Anybody's hurt, I report to DHS. So I go back in with my wife, you know, and the doctor comes in and says, you know, I hear you're unhappy about. And I said, well, yeah. So I show her my phone. I said, you know, nowadays, anything you want to know is on right here. Here's pictures. I showed her the whole thing. She said, ultimately, you're right. This is not a matter. Should be reported. I'm going to go talk to a social worker. 15 minutes later, she comes back and says, it's too late. She already reported. And I said, gee, I wonder what she reported. Like, what is the basis of the report? And so, you know, we go home and we get a phone call a couple days later saying, I was at your house and you weren't home. Well, yeah, because we didn't know you were coming, right? But that's what happened. So a DHS worker comes out to our house, nice person, very professional, sees all the stuff, the trophies, the kids, and take her up, see the martial arts room. And she said, not only is it unfounded, it's not, you know, I'm closing the file. Like, there's nothing wrong here. So I said to my wife, I said, you know, we have never spoken to our son. I think he was 8 years old at the time, Joshua. I said, we never talked to him about this. Let's ask him what happened. And you know, I got four kids. Three of them, very talkative. But the one kid, him, quiet as a, you know, quiet. They don't say anything.
Right.
So I said, Joshua, do you remember the day we went to the hospital? I said, do you remember the lady you talked to? I said, Did she say anything to you? Did she ask you any questions? No. I said, well, you know, what, did she say anything? Yeah. I said, what'd she say? You don't like judo. I said, what did you say? Sometimes. I said, anything else? He said, no. I said, okay. So I looked at my wife and I said, you know, I don't know if that person was having a bad day, but I feel like I should just tell someone at CHOP, like, hey, you're a great hospital, fantastic, best in the world, we love you. But you got this social worker, and this is what happened. So
she was feeding, telling the child that he didn't like it, you know, to try to get...
Implying, right?
Implying.
I asked a DH worker, I said, by the way, what was the report? She said the report was suspected abuse by discipline. Like, in other words, you're taking a kid and punishing him by, like, throwing him like you're teaching him martial arts. So I said, okay, wow, that seems to be pretty, like, sure. There's no evidence of that. The evidence is that's not what happened, right?
A reach and a half.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we do this every Sunday with four children, with, you know. So I said, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go talk to Children's Hospital, and I did, and I talked to some very responsible people. And I told them, this is what happened. They told me that's the way it's supposed to happen. And I was surprised. I mean, what do you mean it's supposed to happen that way? He said, oh, yeah, we train everyone in here that if you get a gut feeling, like if you look at someone, you get a gut reaction, you report it.
And to DHS.
To DHS. And I was very surprised by that response. You're teaching people to do this. And I hadn't read the Child Protective Services Act. But I said, there's no way that can be a legal standard. Like, you just look at someone, you feel a tingling feeling, you report it. Because you are a mandated reporter. You're your children's hospital. Like, when you report someone, it seems to me it would be rather significant. And you can't just look at someone and say, I think they're abusing their child. You would have some reason to do that. And we had a lengthy conversation, which kind of ended around the fact that the executives from Canada, he loves hockey. And I said, that's funny, because I think hockey's dangerous. I'm from Southwest Philly. We don't do hockey, right? But as an Asian American, martial arts is kind of a normal thing we do. I think that's not dangerous. So it seems rather subjective to me. So I decided to go talk to the DHS commissioner. I said, you know, I just feel like, you know, I should let her know that we have one of the finest children's hospitals, but this is what they're doing. And so I did meet with her, and basically I was told by her and her deputies that that's the law. Well, by this time I had read the Child Protective Services Act, and I said, that's not the law. The
you're
law.
You're an attorney.
Yeah, I'm an attorney, and I was a former prosecutor, and, you know, I'm a legislator. So I said, that's not the law. The law is you have to have a reasonable, that means reasonable, suspicion of child abuse, not poverty, you know, abuse. And, you know.
Or a male with an injured child.
Yeah. So
I mean, seriously, that's the benchmark.
Yeah, yeah. Or as it turns out, a lot less than that.
Yeah.
So what happens is, you know, I said I'm going to have a hearing, and basically the response I got is that'll be a huge political mistake, and I took that as a threat, mm-hmm. which is okay because I said,
this is somebody you knew and you had a good relationship.
Someone I knew, always had a good relationship, but the whole composure and everything changed. And I said, you know, that's odd. And like, I wonder why this is such an issue. It just seems to me that this should not be an issue. In other words, the Department of Human Services does good work, has a great mission, I'm sure full of wonderful people. But why, when something is pointed out that is obviously a legal standard and it makes a lot of sense, that people would be pushing against it? So I did have a hearing, and to my surprise, I wasn't surprised about the hearing. We prepared a hearing. We had national experts. We had two law professors, one from Penn, one from NYU, leading experts. They all said Philadelphia is the worst city in America, has the highest rate of child removal.
Child removal.
Child removal.
Not child abuse.
Not child abuse. Child removal. It has no more or less abuse per, let's say, population than another place, but we remove children.
But address that, the removal thing, because there's no due process in that
yeah,
situation.
Yeah, so what happens is Philadelphia at that time, and they have kind of changed the reporting system, so you won't find it as well these days, but at the time, all the records indicated that Philadelphia removes children from families at a rate 3 times higher than New York City and 4 times higher than Chicago, with no additional or intervening information as to why that occurs.
Is this Philadelphia or DHS?
DHS in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia. Okay.
DHS in Philadelphia.
Okay, I got you.
This process, right? And so, but the surprising part was this: 57 witnesses showed up to make public comment, which is unheard of. We have hearings of all sorts. You might get nobody show up. You might get 2 people, 3 people. 57, if I could remember, like 100% single moms and grandmoms and aunts, like, you know, overwhelmingly African-American. It's unheard of. 57 people showed up to talk about, you know, how their children were taken from them. And you know, of course, we're getting one side of the story. And so from there, you know, they had written a story about, you know, kind of my experience. I shared it with the press. And then we had the hearing. My phone was ringing off the hook. My email was full of people. You know, it was ridiculous how many people were trying to get in touch with us. So we started a process of bringing people in, talking with them, and trying to get a handle on what was happening. We asked them, would you be okay if we videotaped you? They said yes. You know, if they didn't, we didn't do that. Because it was, you know, they're coming in and they cannot tell us this story without crying, taking 2 hours.
A lot like the woman with her daughter.
Oh, yeah. Listen, you know, but they're coming in here with these very, like, it's coming out, right? So we're trying to control this because we have to do due diligence. You know, I understand there's 2 sides of the story, but we have to get some corroboration. Like, is this a legitimate story? You know, how you know, what's going on here? And so for the cases where we could actually get evidence, the evidence was shocking. And that's not even the right word. The evidence
overwhelming.
Was...
overwhelming?
You know, it was disgusting. It was heart-wrenching. It was frustrating and angering. Cases where it's an anonymous phone call. So someone just calls and says, this guy, Joe Doherty, you know, he's abusing his children. I could call 30 times. And on the 30th time, I get someone who says, I better check this out. I can just do that. You have someone knocks on your door,
and let's just keep following that up. Mm-hmm. Somebody once told me that a husband and a wife having, you know, in a bad divorce, somebody will say something. He's hitting the kid. Next thing you know, he or she is hitting the kid, and it along your lines, David. Somebody calls anonymously, somebody from DHS comes out, and there's no hearings or anything like that. They can actually and have actually taken the kids in that scenario. Is that correct?
That is correct. So what happens is, you know, there are cases for sure where they come out and they're very reasonable. They look, they act responsibly. There are cases where, thankfully, they got involved and they intervened in a bad situation. But there are also cases where they've come out without any explanation as to why. They don't tell you why they're in your house. And listen, mostly they're talking to people who have no idea. They come at night. They knock on the door. They say, we want to come in. And if you say, like, am I supposed to let you in? They said, listen, if you don't let us in, we'll come back with the police. So you might as well let us in now. And we'll look around, everything will be okay. So they walk. But see, they never identify what they're looking for. Like a police officer and a detective cannot enter your house. They need a warrant. And they need to tell you what they're looking for. Obviously, if they're looking for a shotgun, it's not in the sock drawer, right? But here, they walk in without telling you who reported it, what they reported. So you don't know what they're looking for. And they may do this investigation for like 2-3 months. And at the end of it, they may say that the allegations are not founded. However, you know, we notice you don't have a winter coat. We notice there looks like there's something's leaking. We saw some mouse droppings over there. So we're going to remove your kids. And then the parents will get upset. Don't get upset. You know, you're going to make things worse. You'll get a chance to tell the judge.
So if you're poor, you have a greater likelihood of having your kid removed.
Yes, here's an interesting thing. A lot of times when they get involved, they ask you, what do you do for a living? And nobody thinks of, oh, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor. And nobody thinks about it. But what does that have to do with any of the issues? And what I've come to believe is when you say I'm unemployed, I haven't had a job for a while, you know, I'm on assistance or something like that. They're figuring out who you are because, yeah, gut feeling. They're sizing up. So if you're a lawyer, we don't know that you're really hurting anybody. If you're a doctor, no, you couldn't be. Like, they're judging you by your profession, by your
income. Social status.
Yeah. You know, so what happens is by your last name, you know.
Seems like an equal rights protection kind of.
It's a problem because they say that the case is unfounded, but you have 3 children and they remove them. Now, by the way, the children are sometimes like...
Where do they take them, by the way?
No, I'll get into that. Yeah. Sometimes the children are 17, 14, and 11. So they can perfectly speak for themselves. And in many cases, they're saying there was no abuse, there was no this, there's no that. But nobody listens to them. So they get taken out. It is not rare that they cannot place them in one house. So they send them out to 3 different locations, sometimes not even in the same county. And then in one case, the one I'm actually thinking of right now, they couldn't place the child in a home, so they put her in a delinquent facility.
This is where I can jump in.
Yeah, so what for the listeners, that's for kids who have done things in violation of the criminal laws as a juvenile. And so this girl is placed in with a bunch of other girls, and she is bewildered as to where she is, and people know it in there. They know she doesn't know where she is or why she's there. So to make, to try to progress with this, what happens is, well, by the time you get into court, you know, it could be a couple of months or more, and you're assigned an attorney. But your attorney gets paid something like $300 per year total, expense, everything for your case. And what happens is they sit outside. They're not allowed in the courtroom. And then there's stuff going on in the courtroom. And then someone comes out, you know, hours into it and says your case has been continued. You know, you got to come back in like 3 months. So they come back in 3 months and sit, and then someone says, well, your case is continued. Now the people are upset. Oh, you know, well, you know, your daughter is depressed. You know, she's being put on medication. Your other daughter ran away from the...
God knows what's happening to them in the home.
Moved to a different school. And what I do find interesting, and this is just anecdotal, is the kids resent the parent. You know...
For letting it happen to them.
Right. In other words, the kids are upset with the parent because the parent wasn't strong enough or didn't love him enough or didn't care enough or wasn't intelligent enough or wasn't wealthy enough to protect him. The kids resent the parents, and there is a deterioration in the parent-child relationship, the ability for a single mother to say, put down your phone, get to your homework. You know,
what's ironic, David, is this. You would think they would have the trial with the judge before they took the kids out.
Right. So to, you know, just to say, listen, in the worst cases, it has been horrendous where, you know, a grandmother has picked up her kids from a facility and within 4 days takes the child to St. Christopher's because the 5-year-old is defecating on herself and saying, because she's been anally penetrated by the mother's boyfriend. And the 10-year-old brother, you know, corroborates her story and tells the police, the doctor, the nurses, the social workers in the hospital that, you know, the boyfriend picks up the sister early, comes back later, picks him. He's been abused. It's in the medical report. And DHS says it's unfounded. I don't want to say DHS. A DHS person determines that all these things are unfounded, and they try to place the child with the abuser, the alleged abuser, who says he's the father of the child, and it turns out based on, you know, a blood work that he's not. It's proven that he's not the father. And the family come out and say he's not the father. So, you know, the retaliation then is that the grandmother who reported this, she's been raising another grandchild since birth. They show up at her house, the police, uniformed police with 2 DHS workers, and they take the child. And they say this is a court order, and we have the paper. It's not a court order. So how does this happen? And how can this continue to happen? So I basically, you know, off of all these things...
It was a Pandora's box that opened up that was unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like the Catholic Church, only it's pervasive. And it is really based on a lot of things that involved, at this point in time, money. Because there is a lot of money for a lot of things, and a lot of people are getting paid to keep this thing going. And it sounds kind of crazy, but, you know, listen, I've looked into it, and
did hearings, right?
We did hearings. We did a lot of things. So I introduced a resolution to create a special committee to examine, like, the compliance of Department of Human Services with state law. And the resistance to the resolution was defeated. There was an entire campaign to defeat this resolution to create a special committee, even after all of this evidence and newspaper articles and things like that. You know, like, but interestingly enough, not from your typical Philadelphia media. You know, it's from like some other type of like the Legal Intelligencer or the Philadelphia Weekly or something like as this continues, right? Not your mainstream media. And
they were the ones that providing the resistance,
the media resistance.
No, the resistance was coming from, I think, good-minded people and people who are for children's rights. But they were very much for Department of Human Services, which funds a lot of things. And they were lobbying the council people to defeat the creation of a special committee. But what happened is... they were going to hold it, meet with the I call them the moms because they're like 98% women. They were going to meet with the moms over the summer, but when the moms showed up, there was nobody there at the free library. So they came back in the fall with a vengeance. There were like 100 of these, you know, moms and grandmoms raising hell.
About in favor of what you're talking about, because
they were making public comment before, you know, COVID and virtual. They were there, and you know, you could imagine sheriffs trying to grab these moms, and you know, they had signs and everything, and they were raising hell.
Where are we right now with it, David?
So where we are now is we've completed our report. We did form a special committee, and we are about to publish the report. I think we're going to do it in April. We're refining it right now, and there are recommendations. We have a national expert. We have a former family court AJ administrative judge. We have moms involved. So we have a report on recommendations of how to improve this system. Now the tricky part is this. I'm a city councilman, and to the extent involves a city department, I can be engaged. But this is really about state law and the application of state law, and it's not an issue that's been picked up by our state representatives or state senators. And I'm telling these moms, when you come to me, I'm a council person, and I want to help you because I don't want to say no. But you have to go to talk to your state reps and state senators in your communities and neighborhoods. And so we are going to find out after this report is published, you know, what comes of this. But it is a very serious problem.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that, and we had talked about this before, it's actually mind-boggling. John Zervanos, if you will, because you mentioned a little while ago, that's where you come in, your perspective.
Well, it's an extraordinary story. You know, no system is perfect, as we've learned as we get older. No system is ever perfect. We try to make it perfect, and that's where the frustration lies. We just try to have to make it as good as it can be, and I applaud the councilman for taking these measures. I think the fear that's associated with an innocent child being abused really kind of overrides the tactics that are going on.
You started this by saying this is potentially the overkill from people.
It can be overkill, and I have to be really sensitive here, because as an advocate for victims,
right,
it's a delicate situation,
sure,
for especially a lawyer like myself,
because some people are being abused in their home,
no question. Yes. And the abuse is horrible,
right?
Okay, but the councilman did touch something that is where we've come into play, where these kids are removed. They can't put them in a foster home because there's nothing available, which does, before I move on, I'd like to just, not professionally, but I've had interaction with foster care parents who have taken on foster kids who I've known socially. And, you know, I would be like, yeah, it's a huge responsibility. And I'm like, wow, you know, that's really nice of you. That's great. And I see what they're doing, and they take in these kids that are
troubled,
really troubled. And it's difficult because it wreaks havoc in their own home.
Right.
Okay. And then, you know, here I am. I didn't really know a lot about it. I'm going back about 10 years when I had this interaction with somebody I know socially. And you know, they were going through a tough time financially, and she had explained to me, they took in two boys from the same home, which was a good thing. You were saying how these kids are being separated. So they actually took two brothers from the same home and took them on. But then I find out how they get paid for this.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, these folks were legit.
Okay. Right.
They did a beautiful job with these kids. But I thought to myself,
disaster.
Just think of the foster folks out there that look at that as a financial opportunity.
Right.
And they could care less about these kids. And oftentimes, you know, they go from, how's that saying? You know, they go from the kitchen to the fire, whatever that is.
Yeah, the pan to the fire,
Yeah. You put a kid who's being abused by his biological parents, and then they wind up in a foster care environment where they're being even more abused.
Sure.
And it's so incredibly tragic. And then you ask yourself as a lawyer when you hear these stories, well, what the hell is DHS doing in order to vet these parents? And then you look into it and you realize the system is so compromised because there's just so much on it that there's not enough time to find quality foster parents. And this is a situation that is national. It's not just particular to Philadelphia. As I've heard about, you know, I read about a case in Colorado where kids went from these horrible parents to these foster parents that wound up abusing the hell out of these kids, and the one kid died.
Oh my God.
And then at the hands of the foster parents. So the abusing parents decided they wanted to sue the social program out in the Colorado state, whatever it was. I read it in one of my legal journals. And then the judge was going to make a finding, or I guess the parents hired a lawyer. They wanted their kids back. So, and what they did was horrible.
But not quite as bad as killing
them.
But
I think a judge finally said, wait.
Neither one of you.
Your two children left because you guys were violating them so terribly.
Right.
We sent them to foster care, and unfortunately that was a terrible situation, and one of the kids died at the hands of these foster parents. And now you're asking for them back, and nothing about your situation has changed. And you know what happens is then you send these poor children into an institution, a home that's supposed to care for them. A lot of them are medical places that are helping kids with drug abuse and some of the other things. And these kids don't have any business being in there. So then they're exposed to an environment that's even more challenging. And it's really a vicious cycle. But what really gets to me is when then you find out that when they go into these homes, not foster homes, I'm talking about institutional places, and someone at that institutional place then goes and violates these kids.
Now, John.
And that's a disgrace. And is anybody at DHS knocking on their doors and saying, hey, we got these reports, we're going to shut you down? They don't do that. They keep sending these kids back to the same places.
Now, your firm represents individuals in similar situations, okay? Maybe they were put in, like we talk about, like the Glenn Mills situation, the Boy Scouts, the Catholic Church, where there was a trusted organization.
Well, you got the Cash for Kids up there in Scranton where two judges went to jail.
Right.
Because they're getting paid to send kids to these places.
So what does your firm do in seeking justice, at least civilly? You don't handle the criminal case, but it goes in tandem one way or the other.
It's the only thing we can do is we conduct our own investigation and we file a civil suit in order to gain money damages for these kids. But, you know, they're minors, and where's the money going? And then you got to, who's the adult that's going to be responsible for their money? Now, it's tied up, but, you know, at some point they turn 18, and God only knows what happens to it. We try to create, and we're going to have a show on this down the road, kind of structured, which try to structure their recovery so that it's doled out to them in piecemeal. But, it's a challenge. Because your job when you settle a case is not, here's a check, have a good life. You have to create some security for them.
Right.
A future. Whether it's a paraplegic or a catastrophically injured individual who's doesn't have an income stream anymore, and you hand them a huge check, they've never had a huge check in their lives.
Now, my question, these are they're almost identical situations in a lot of different ways, but is it possible for one of those families? And I don't want to get into this directly, but is there a case against DHS for sending, a child into a bad situation and without due process like it's going on?
I think you can sue any governmental agency, but then you're getting into, civil rights violations and you got to create some kind of state created danger situation, which you can do, but it's a lot more challenging.
Well, one of the things I understand is this, and I'm not getting into that particular area, but I will say this: justice happens in the courtroom, and change happens in the courtroom. So you look at the Catholic.
You got to get to a courtroom.
Yeah, there are changing laws right now nationally. In other words, as you know, as there was a desire to help kids and help families, the federal government started a program whereby they were incentivizing people to get involved, doctors, foster care, all kind of things going on. Everybody was getting paid. And it resulted in a removal of children. And as I said, listen, cases where there's an allegation that is unfounded and determined to be untrue, and yet a child who's in a good home with good grades ends up separated from her siblings, end up being physically, sexually abused, ends up her life ruined, parents ruined. But the laws protected everyone from being civilly. Now they are criminally, in my opinion, some of these cases where they're knowingly sending these children to pedophiles and abusers. Yeah, and they're changing the records and lying and things like that. Absolutely, that should be investigated and they should be arrested. But the civil litigation has been problematic, and certain jurisdictions have begun, you know, the process of changing, because some of it...
sovereign immunity laws for the longest
time. So that has begun to change. And part of it, as John said, is the Sandusky case in Pennsylvania. There was a reaction to it and well-intentioned, and then another reaction and a continuation of a reaction, and then all of a sudden the politicians and legislators, they can just keep adding more. And then it goes from a system that is meant to better protect children into an overprotective and ultimately almost abusive system, where now teachers are being taken out of the classroom for breaking up fights. Oh, someone's, you know, they're put in what's called the rubber room. And if you don't report something because you honestly don't think it's anything, you could lose your job as a teacher, as a coach. You know, it's an overreaction.
Is that where that committee comes in, though?
We need to go absolutely protect children. We need to have mandated reporters. But you cannot start changing the burdens of proof and start putting like the and this is the problem. It is commonly taught in our hospitals. I've spoken to doctors and nurses and other medical professionals who believe that if they think you're funny looking, they should report you. And the idea is that they misunderstand what is a reasonable suspicion. They say, I'm a reasonable person. I have a suspicion. I said, no, that's not a reasonable suspicion. A reasonable person can have a very unreasonable suspicion. And so, well, where do you find... It's in the law, you know. It's a pretty common thing that must be done in jury trials, especially in criminal law. But it's there. But you've been misinformed. And see, they are required to take these classes that teach them to apply the law. Well, I've come to the point where I think this is how it works, to be very, very truthful about it. I think if I was administering a major entity, I would not want someone coming up a year later saying, you know, an important employee of mine, a surgeon, a nurse, an executive, Joe Doherty, didn't report something, and take him out. Just report everything. As long as you report everything, we're never in trouble. So why do I want to tell you, use your judgment? Why don't I just tell you, like, anything something comes up, don't hesitate. You report it, and it's up to them.
Well, it's up to you guys then investigate it.
Then DHS picks it up. See, they don't investigate it. They just report it, and they're reporting anything. But you can't report anything. Again, like in my situation with my son, the evidence is it's just a sports accident. But when the social worker reports it, she can't say, oh, this is a sports accident. She has to report what she suspects is the abuse, abusive discipline.
Right now, that's what she does.
You know what
now.
The problem here, though, is? And what the councilman is saying is the system is designed to overreact to John Smith or Mary Jones. The folks that have kids in public schools, the people that get up in the morning, go to work, their kid has an accident, you take them to the hospital, and they got a bullseye on their head because DHS needs to investigate potential abuse. Where the system really fails is what happens next. And you got institutions that are being protected by the very agency that has created them. They're so quick to point the finger at Mary Jones, but then they don't take the necessary steps to vet what's going on in these places that are designed to protect children. And I shared with you a story where one of these kids, an older kid, not like 8 or 9, you know, one of these kids that were like 15 or 16, a male who had gotten himself into some trouble. And this wasn't a sexual abuse or situation, but just a troubled kid taken from his mother, okay, because he blamed his mom for everything, and put into an institution for troubled youths. And they gave him a job, and the person who was his immediate supervisor starts trying to sexually assault him. He then doesn't know what to say because he's afraid, well, who's going to believe me because I'm a petty criminal, you know, stealing stuff from Wawa. Who's going to believe me that this woman is trying to assault me every time I show up for work? Then he didn't want to go to work, and then he got into more trouble until he told his mother, who then came to us. And then we got involved, and we got him justice because that woman was called out on it.
Let me ask you a question because we only have a couple minutes.
Right.
John, how do you deal, you know, when somebody has a situation, first of all, in order to make that call, you know, to your office and obviously speak to you or one of the other attorneys, is there any cost for that? Is this a contingency fee situation?
Everything we do is contingency. We don't expect our clients to be able to spend anything. And the important news in all of this is you call a lawyer that does personal injury or, you know, civil litigation representing victims. Yeah, you don't get paid unless you win.
But the lawyer doesn't get paid, right?
But more importantly, we have the financial resources to conduct the investigation and do the work to determine whether you even have a case. Some of the most important work done by a lawyer is before you even file a lawsuit. And that takes time and it takes money.
Of
money.
Is it confidential? If somebody's afraid, I mean, in other words, if somebody, obviously they've been sexually assaulted or assaulted, they're afraid. When they call your office.
Oh, yeah, we keep everything confidential. But here's something that's interesting, and I should share that with the listeners, is a lot of times some of these cases we get involved with, there's a criminal investigation already going. And we try to work with the DAs and try to get information. And they don't want us to mess with them because they think we're going to screw up their investigation. And then sometimes they think we're going to feed off of their work. And they just say, yeah, you go away. All you're interested in is money. But what's funny is when it's flipped and we're way ahead in the investigation, they come to us and ask us for our investigation.
You cooperate.
Always. Now, always.
What cases, like in other words, are there any cases that are public right now? You know, I mean, I'm giving an example. These are not, but, you know, there's the Boy Scouts of America, Glenn Mills, there's the Catholic Church, there's all kinds of, you know, and I'm not saying that you're representing those, you know, victims, but are there any situations that are public right now that you want to in a sense, shout out in case somebody's listening? Or just in general,
we're involved in some private school situations where there's sexual assault, where a teacher invites somebody over. But what I'd like to tell the viewers is, and I can't really discuss a lot of the cases.
Sure, of course.
A lot of times we're really hamstrung, but it's interesting. You know, I talked about sovereign immunity, and for the longest time, you cannot sue a public entity, a state or municipal owned entity, townships. School districts, okay? If a teacher sexually molested a kid,
it would be only criminal.
You couldn't sue the school district, even if they had notice of it, unless you created some kind of civil rights claim. And that's a hurdle and a half, because then you got to get through the federal judges to decide whether or not you've made your case to even let it get to a courtroom, okay? There's a gatekeepers like no others. But they've changed the laws, finally, because of all the things that have happened in the last 10 years, where public schools don't have the protection of sovereign immunity anymore. You could sue a school for like 4 things, if they had a hole in the floor or, you know, it's the general negligence stuff. But now, if a student gets sexually assaulted by a teacher, you don't have to go through the other ritual. You can actually, you know, a straight-on negligence case and you can sue the school district.
Okay, so we only got a minute or so. Councilman O, first of all, want to thank you for the job you do. You know, I think incredibly highly of what you do. One of the things I love is, and I wish I was a fly on the wall when that DHS representative said, if you move forward, you know, yeah, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, that's a challenge out
right
there.
And I know Councilman Owen, and I, when we were having it, and the first thing Councilman Owen said, okay, so it's time to have a hearing, right?
Well, you know,
thanks for, you know, you know what you do. Any parting words?
Yeah, if you are someone who you connect with what we're talking about, don't be afraid. Many mm-hmm. people have come forward, and you know, unfortunately, they choose who they victimize, and these are people that they think won't fight back, that doubt their own credibility, doubt their own worth. You know, these things should not be happening. The fact that this happens systemically is victimizing a lot of people, and what you can do to end that victimization. Yeah, we want to support DHS and all those people doing good things, but we cannot allow people to abuse children, abuse families, break the law blatantly, and then take the high ground like they're untouchable. That has to be stopped.
John Tervanos, closing words.
I want to compliment Councilman O for doing great work and taking the time to listen to one constituent that came in to complain. And because he took her seriously, he opened up a lot of doors and shed light on a system that is working but can be a lot better. And that's the best news in all of this.
Well, I want to say this. I want to thank, obviously, you both. To me, and I say this, I'm not just because you're both friends and I respect both of you, but you're both heroes. You provide justice and an opportunity for an individual who's being wronged to have somebody who can be in their corner and actually do something about it. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Soloff and Zervanos show on WWDB Talk 860. We want to thank our host, John Zervanos. We want to thank Councilman David O, for advocating on behalf of those who cannot advocate for themselves. On behalf of John Zervanos, Councilman O, I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day.